big show for you here today. It is our first of many recaps of the NFL draft. Justin Boone sits down with me for a little winners and losers. We've each got four winners and two losers coming out of the NFL draft. Whose stock is up? Who are we excited to see that they've landed in a great spot? And who are we a little nervous about? Could be veteran, could be rookie. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because the NFL draft, for the most part, we've got a few picks kind of coming in here as we are live. I'm live from the New York City office, so things are happening here. The NFL draft is coming to a close, but for the most part, this thing is in the books, and joining me to recap everything that we've seen so far, not here with me in New York, but in his comfortable home, it is my guy, my buddy, Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, man?
Man, a lot is going on this weekend. But first off, what a great setup you have over there. Look how professional you look. Look how handsome you are today between those two lamps. This is great.
Well, I'm glad that you think so. I appreciate that. But no, it's been really fun here in New York. We got a great crew working. There's a lot going on from a crew perspective, by the way. This is a serious operation. This is not just like me being in my little box at home and it's me and the two dogs running the whole operation. No, we got a whole big thing here going on. Hopefully everybody has been in tune with us all weekend, all NFL draft coverage here from Yahoo Sports. It's been a great, great time recapping live the whole deal. And now we've got this show coming up here, Boone, and you and I are going to put this thing to bed. We're going to talk through what we have learned from the NFL draft. We're going to do, you know, a little bit of a trope exercise. Okay. We're going to do some winners and losers from the NFL draft. We are going to skew more positive, Boone, because you and I are well known to be rosy, bright fellas. All right. We're going to do eight winners. So four from each of us and then four losers, two from each of us. So that is what we are going to do here. We're going to do winners and losers, but I do just want to point out here, it's not been an optimal draft from a fantasy football perspective. Okay. I think we can just get that off the top here. And I want to get your reaction to that. But before I throw it to you, I just want to show this tweet here from our buddy JJ Zacharyson. I think he really put this well. He said, quote, "Hey, if you're into dynasty fantasy football, you can either do your rookie draft or you can punch yourself in the groin for 10 straight minutes. Very similar experience this year." So that's JJ's reaction. Boone, how did you feel just kind of with the draft as a whole, how things have shaken out so far?
Similarly, I mean, we predicted a lot of things. Some of them came true. Some of them didn't. The one thing that we definitely nailed, though, was this wasn't as good of a rookie class from a fantasy perspective, right? It just wasn't. There was some depth at tight end. We saw that be the case with a lot of guys going off the board. There's a little bit of depth at receiver, but overall, the running back class was not great at all. It was one running back, and then, you know, there was another one that went in the first round who we're going to talk about today, but after Jeremiah Love at the top, it was not great, and we knew that going in. Kind of a similar thing at quarterback as well. Ty Simpson, people have varying opinions on. He went higher than expected, but still, Fernando Mendoza was the guy. Ty Simpson is not going to start anytime soon for the Rams. At least they're hoping not anytime soon. So we knew that this wasn't going to be as good of a class. The bigger problem, though, and the gut punch and what JJ is referring to in those tweets is we got a bunch of bad landing spots for these guys as well. And maybe not bad long term. Maybe the guys will be okay for Dynasty down the road. But when you're talking redraft, there's not that many of these rookies that are going to be very exciting in year one, unless we see some injuries open up a path or unless we see some guys overperform, right? So that was really the biggest problem. And we'll go through it today and we'll reference the guys who we think have a chance for redraft and the guys that we might be waiting on. But that was the biggest problem with this draft by far, that it wasn't a deep class. And then it got made even worse by the fact that we got a bunch of players going to bad landing spots.
Yeah, and obviously, again, we'll talk about this throughout the course of the show. You know, we are pretty bad at times about predicting situations long term. That being said, you know, two of like my favorite kind of not outside of the consensus big three receivers, of course, the guys who are going to go in the first round, KC Concepcion and Denzel Boston, both of those guys go to the Browns, plus Omar Cooper Jr. I really liked a lot. He goes to the Jets, and they also took another guy in the first round. So I think that is a big part of what we're going to talk about today, too. But I will say, and I'm going to come back to this later on, too, there are some things I think we can really learn from this NFL draft from like a big league-wide perspective. And there are some really interesting, especially at receiver, like some role players that got drafted here that I think are going to help their NFL teams. But there's really no better example, Boone, than the fact that we had, I believe, 8 tight ends go on the second day of the NFL draft. And so many of these guys are like kind of the gritty, grinder, blocker, inline types that will help their NFL team, but not a lot of those guys, even though they got good, quote, draft capital, are not going to really help us from a fantasy standpoint.
Yeah, and by comparison, we got one running back on day two, right? Versus last year, we've joked about it, but last year in the lead up to the season, after the draft, we were talking about, I was going through, what, 27 running backs that people could be looking at from a dynasty perspective, could have some redraft value. This year, it is nothing like that. There's going to be a few that we'll bring up today that I think are interesting. I also wrote an article that's up on the site right now about some of the guys from day two who I think might fly under the radar a little bit, but have some pretty big upside. So people should go check that out. So it's going to just be a little bit different of a year. It's going to be a little more difficult to find value this year. And that's fun, actually, Harmon. Who wants it to be obvious, right? Yeah. We want to have a difficult time with this and have to work for it. It'll make it much more enjoyable when we find these guys, these diamonds in the rough, who are starring for our fantasy team, whether it's this year or whether it's a couple years from now.
So it sounds like what you're saying here is we're going to have to earn our paycheck this year. We're going to really have to earn it. We're going to have to find these guys. Thanks. I like it. Okay. Just last thing real quick before we get into the winners and losers, and we're going to start winners here because I think based on the tenor of this show at the start, we desperately need to skew positive at some point. Is there anything actionable that you can kind of, from a strategy standpoint, if it's, is this the time really before people go on their rookie drafts? Like they get on the clock here. Is like this the time to start shopping some of these picks for veterans, you know? And we'll unpack that more, not just necessarily on this show, but maybe over the course of the next week, 2 weeks, whatever, like maybe some interesting targets and things like that. But do you think this is the time maybe people can go out and say, hey, I'm not into this rookie class. Boone's not into this rookie class. JJ said it's, you know, it's basically the same as punching yourself in the groin for 10 straight minutes. That kind of says it all. Do you think this is the time for to maybe ship off some of those rookie picks and look at some veterans that might have more upside or proven track record?
I think the time for that was over the last 12 months. I don't know if this is the time for that. And normally I would say, as the calendar for fantasy goes around, when you get to this time of the year, when you get to your rookie draft, that tends to be when the picks are the most valuable. And yet I feel like at this point, everybody knows what's going on. Everybody knows that there's, you know, 5 or so players that I think we feel pretty confident about in the first round of rookie drafts. And then after that, there's a massive drop off. And that's why this isn't hindsight analysis. Over the last year, we were talking about this. We were saying the 2027 class, much better. I have friends who I told, hey, before your league mates figure it out, go trade for 2027 picks. I have a friend the other day who showed me he has 3 first rounders, 5 second rounders in 2027. His team's going to be dominant. And he did that by unloading older veterans, unloading 2026 picks. I'm in the same boat. I have a lot of first round picks, even some late first round picks, because they were difficult to move. And especially we're in a lot of analyst leagues where they were already on to the fact that 2027 was going to be better than 2026. At least we expect it to be. But that's kind of what I'm looking at right now. I don't know that you're going to get great value. So I think you're going to want to try to figure out, you know, the players that you might want to target in these ranges. If you're trying to trade a second round pick, most years you can get a pretty quality veteran. This year, I don't think that's the case. And Harmon, one of the reasons is because like when we get to the second round of rookie drafts this year, I'm going to be talking up like guys who ended up being the number 2 back in their backfield and might not even have a chance to get the starting job, might be stuck behind someone, but you're going to take them with your second round pick because of the value they might have as that one injury away guy. That's the situation this year. We are not looking at the second round going, oh my God, there's all these players who could be first round values, could blow up. It's not like that at all. When we get to the late first round into the second and early third, drafts are going to vary wildly this year. And again, that's something that we've talked about a bunch. So I think it's a little bit past the time where you can make a grand statement and say, hey, this isn't the draft for you. Go trade out of it. I just don't think you're going to get value if you're doing that.
That's a really good point. I think the time has come and gone for that. You're probably right, but I would say, like, what to think about now in the moment if you're about to have these rookie drafts, and they are going to be coming up here. People might be starting them, you know, tomorrow. That is probably going to happen here. I would say, like, don't be beholden to, like, the consensus or whatever the early ADP is. I think there is just going to be such a lack of clarity and such a lack of, okay, this is clearly how things are going to fall. Maybe even this is a year to kind of go off kilter from a draft capital standpoint, which, by the way, I think sometimes we're a little bit too beholden to as it is. I always think that some of my biggest mistakes have come from, I remember one of my biggest ones, and I'll just, again, we're going to get into the show here in just a second, but one of my biggest mistakes I ever made was I had Kadarius Toney and Amon-Ra St. Brown in the same tier of prospects, like pre-draft. I was not into Toney where he went. I was not a big, you know, Kadarius Toney believer, and I liked Amon-Ra St. Brown as this, you know, outside to inside power slot conversion player. But I got on the clock in a rookie draft, and even though I liked St. Brown's landing spot, I liked him more as a talent, I went with the draft capital. I was like, well, they spent a first round pick on Kadarius Toney. In no world would I have spent a first round pick on Kadarius Toney. So I went away from myself and didn't trust my gut. And I obviously, it's still bothering me to this day. And that was what, like 5 years ago? It's probably time for me to get over it. But nevertheless, I think this might be a year, maybe not so far as taking fourth round picks over first round picks necessarily, but it might be a year to really, you know, eschew from being too kind of rigid with the draft capital rankings and consensus opinions, because there just really isn't a lot of clear upside targets in that range. But with that, let's get into it here. Let's get into the meat of the show, and let's finally skew a little positive here, Boone, as we've started the show for the first 10 minutes with a little bit of a dour tone here. Give me your first winner from the 2026 NFL draft.
Well, real quick, before we get into this player, I would just say I will have my rookie rankings updated and on the site as early as I can tomorrow. And you're right, a lot of people, including myself, are going to start their rookie drafts tomorrow. So I will have those up. I'll have some takeaways in there as well. People can use that as a guide, as they always do. Like you said, don't draft purely off of it. Use that as a guide. Make your own decisions. But I felt like that warrants mentioning. And the player that I'm going to talk about here as a winner, I have moved him up. Maybe not everyone has, but I've moved him up to the 102 behind Jeremiah Love, who I think is the clear 101 in all formats. I have Carnell Tate as the 102 in all formats, and that's including in Superflex, above Fernando Mendoza.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I devalue quarterbacks a little bit. I know on my dynasty teams, I've gone out and made sure I was set at quarterback, so perhaps that's informing my opinion a little bit there, and I play them down, but I don't think Mendoza is the traditional 101 type. I don't think he's like the star guy who's going to elevate the franchise. I think he's falling into a situation where he's going to get some help. And I think because of that, I have him just a little bit lower than maybe normally would when a quarterback goes 101. For me, Tate, we were expecting him to go in the top 10. We talked last week about, I think we both thought the Chiefs were going to be a great landing spot for him. I still think that would have been a good one. He went even higher than I expected. He goes in the top five, goes to the Titans fourth overall, just incredible draft capital, and also lands in an offense where he is the guy right away. He becomes that number one target for them. My projection, I have him over 1,000 yards as a rookie here, and I don't do that very often for rookie receivers. Again, I don't think that he's a Malik Nabers type player, but he's a guy who deserved the top 10 capital. And a guy who I was worried was going to end up in a situation, you know, with the Saints or, you know, with the Giants, perhaps behind Neighbors, where there was a number one guy that he was going to have to compete with. In Tennessee, there isn't. There's Wandell Robinson, who will command some volume, but he is not a true number one receiver. Tate is. So this is a great landing spot for him. There's going to be a ton of volume. He can develop and emerge into that true number one guy. That gives him great value in redraft, and that makes him an excellent dynasty pick as well.
Yeah, I like it. I think for me, because I'm working out my rookie rankings as well, specifically with wide receivers, of course, for my site. I think from a Superflex standpoint, I would probably go Mendoza over Tate, but I am also one to kind of overvalue the quarterbacks at times in Superflex. So really, again, I think that is a in the eye of the beholder type of situation here. But I will say that when you look at this landing spot for Carnell Tate. It does make it close, and I think he is going to end up, he was my wide receiver one pre-draft, and I thought there was a chance that if Mekhi Lemon went to a spot that, you know, it was a clear kind of runway for him to be the top target of his team. That did not happen here. I thought there was a chance I could maybe boost Lemon higher or even Casey Concepcion. That did not happen. I will say my first winner is someone that is going to rise from my pre-draft to post-draft rankings, but we'll get into that in a moment here. But Tate was my wide receiver one pre-draft. He is my wide receiver one post-draft. And it comes back to a lot of what I said throughout the cycle, Boone, is that he fits all 32 NFL offenses. And to your point, this is an NFL offense that needs a number one receiver. It needs a perimeter wide out specifically, which is his specialty. I really love the way, and I'm curious if you feel this way too, I really love the way that Carnell Tate's game overlaps with Cam Ward. Like, a lot of what Cam Ward is still is a theory, because statistically he was one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL last year. But the type of guy that he is, he wants to push the ball outside the numbers. He wants to push the ball into tight windows. He's also really good on these big in-breaking routes, or at least he was at Miami. All of that really maps with Carnell Tate's, you know, at least in my opinion, like where he wins as a route runner. So I think the synergy of these two guys is yet another reason for us to break some ties in favor of Carnell Tate.
Would you agree that even though the stats weren't great for Ward last year, and of course we weren't really using him in fantasy, it was a fairly disappointing rookie season overall, I do think he flashed. I do think he showed a lot more than those stats would tell you. I think he could be a much better player. And I think Brian Daboll showing up, and an entirely new offensive coaching staff, an entirely new coaching staff together, but Brian Daboll showing up there, to me, is an upgrade. And I think some of the moves that they've made, whether it's getting Wandell Robinson, now bringing in Tate, that's just going to help this offense as a whole. I think they're going to head in the right direction, and they're going to go from a team where we were basically not even wanting to watch their games last year, let alone use some of their players for fantasy, to now I think this is an exciting young offense. They have pieces that I am going to go after in all formats, and I think Tate is right up the top of the board amongst them. I think he is going to be a great pick. I think he's going to be a value in all formats, and yeah, I'm excited to see what he can be and what the Titans can be after that really bad year that they had last year, where there were some games, there were some times, but you put a rookie out there and you put him out there with the receiving core that they had last season. And yes, you know, Calvin Ridley gets banged up a bunch, so maybe they thought they were going to get more from him, but Chimera Dike and Elik Eomanner, like, this was not a great receiving core last year to give your rookie quarterback. Now they're going to give him a pretty solid receiving core to start with, and I think that's going to just improve the offense as a whole.
I really agree with a lot of what you said there. And I do think that Ward was better than the stats showed last year. Now, I don't know if he's going to be great. You know, I don't know if I'm ready to kind of make that leap, but I definitely think he was better in isolation than what, again, were some pretty disastrous stats. We'll see how much he can improve from that. But I think there's more promise with him there. And to the point of, like, the receivers, Nate had a great stat on Cam Ward, that he had more routes on the field with receivers drafted on day three than like any top pick recently. So that's the great part about, and I'm totally butchering the stat, but it's within that kind of range here. And that's what's great about getting Carnell Tate in the mix, like, and Wandell Robinson too. All those guys are still there that had some moments last year, right? Even Calvin Ridley was brought back to this team, as we're showing on the depth chart right now. Elik Eomanner is still there. Like, maybe he's better as the number three or number four receiver than kind of the number one perimeter guy. I mean, Chimera Dike, I'm wondering how he even finds his way onto the field with Wandell Robinson this year. Like, they almost have a little bit of a surplus of talent now around Cam Ward, but really it does come back to Carnell Tate. I think, you know, he's not the typical profile of a wide receiver who goes fourth overall. He's not like outrageously physically dominant, but he's so technically proficient that I think he's going to be pro ready to help Cam Ward right now. And I think he should be the odds on favorite to lead rookies in receiving yards. But I want to transition to my rookie winner here, my first one. And this is somebody, Boone, that I think actually could challenge Carnell Tate to lead all rookies in receiving yards. And that's Jordan Tyson, who was drafted by the New Orleans Saints. Jordan Tyson was a guy that I did not have him as my number one receiver post-draft. I had him as my wide receiver four, or pre-draft. I had him as my wide receiver four behind Casey Concepcion and behind Mekhi Lemon. But a lot of that was because he was a guy that I thought was going to be very landing spot sensitive. He's someone that if you look at him, he's this 6'2", 200 plus pound wide receiver. I was really worried that he would get typecasted into an offense that honestly kind of like Tennessee, even though I didn't think he would necessarily go to the Titans, but a Tennessee Titans offense that's pretty spread and shred and kind of asks their number one X receiver to be a little bit static and play on the boundary. I don't think that was going to fit Jordan Tyson's game, but the good news is that that's not what he's going to be doing on the Saints offense. Like, this Saints offense spreads the field out. They were number one in pre-snap motion percentage last year on their dropbacks under Kellen Moore and the whole crew there. I think this is a great fit for his game. He's going to be able to move across the formation. He's going to get reps from the slot. He's going to get reps as the Z receiver here. Him and Chris Olave can kind of alternate those two roles. I've mentioned this a lot, but Jordan Tyson was number one in success rate versus zone coverage in reception perception. This offense is going to get him a lot of those favorable looks to get free releases, get him away from press coverage. I also love the fact that he doesn't have the pressure of being the wide receiver one right away. So I think there's going to be some efficiency to his targets. And this is the good part about doing this show now, as opposed to right after night one. We also know now that this team took Bryce Lance late in the draft too. And I don't know that Bryce Lance is going to have a big impact on day one, but long term, Bryce Lance fits really well as kind of that almost sacrificial X receiver to start, but a vertical X receiver role. And that even just kind of says to me, okay, they don't view Jordan Tyson as that X receiver. He's going to be a Z. He's going to be a slot alternating with Chris Olave. So I'm really high on the Saints offense. And this is the type of landing spot now where I can put aside some of, not all of, but some of my concerns about Jordan Tyson pre-draft because of where he went. So to me, Boone, he comes out as a pretty big winner from the first day of the NFL draft.
Yeah, I agree with most of what you said there. We were looking at the Saints as a landing spot for one of these top receivers. It was nice to see one of them actually go there. And yeah, how could you not be excited about this offense? We saw what Olave did last season. There was a lot of volume behind him all year long. He was getting a ton of targets. He was near the top of the league. That's going to come down a bit. So this hurts him a little bit. I wonder how much volume Tyson's going to command. Is it going to be enough to get him into the top 24, 25 fantasy receivers? Because I think Tate has that upside this year. I don't know that Tyson does right away. So I view him more as like a wide receiver three. He'll have some splash weeks, but a very exciting player in what's a very exciting offense with a quarterback, Harmon, that you talked about this last year. You were all in on Tyler Shuck. You brought me along with you. It took me a little convincing. And now we're at a point where this guy went from having a very solid finish to his rookie season. Once he took over under center, he was performing like a top 12 fantasy quarterback. And there was some rushing involved in that as well. But now you're adding a top 10 receiver to this offense. Like, this is so exciting for him. And we could tie it all back in to, you look at Cam Ward during his rookie year, not having the weapons, not having great stats, not being good for fantasy. You wonder about Fernando Mendoza this year. I know he has Brock Bowers, he has Ashton Jeanty. The receiving core for the Raiders right now is very bare. That could be a problem. Maybe that holds him back a little bit. But Shuck did have a true number one receiver in Chris Olave, and now they're adding another very competent receiver to this offense. So I think the Saints are another one of these offenses that for fantasy, you want to invest in, you want pieces of. And we're very excited about what Kellen Moore has been able to do there and to get this team to compete the way they have. And now they're just adding talent on top of that. The Saints are going to be dangerous, man.
I'm going to put producer Colin and the boys on blast. Not on blast. I'm going to put them on notice here. Can we get the Jordan Tyson route chart up? I'm calling for the route chart. I know we've got it somewhere in the works here, so hopefully we can show the route chart for Jordan Tyson from reception perception, because I want to make one quick point about Jordan Tyson and this whole deal here. Because if you think about some of the stuff that you said, I was all in on Tyler Shuck, and I kind of laughed a little bit because I'm like, I definitely didn't start that way. I was actually really skeptical of Tyler Shuck, but I definitely came around by the end once we started seeing some of the proof of concept here for Tyler Shuck. And one of the big reasons that I got really excited about Shuck is, like, this guy would just sit back in the gun and from the far hash would push the ball outside the numbers on some of these big boy routes, some of these bigger outbreaking routes outside of the numbers, some of the slot fade stuff to Chris Olave. And I think that's where Jordan Tyson really cooks. Like, if you look at his reception perception route chart, he broke outside a lot. His best route from a success rate standpoint that he was also used at a high rate was the out route. And I think Tyler Shuck can rip those throws deep out breakers. You look at the dig route percentage for Jordan Tyson. That was one way that, you know, Chris Olave got maximized by Shuck, where he wasn't with Spencer Rattler, was some of the throws over the middle of the field, like ripping those throws between zone coverage. And that, to me, is where Jordan Tyson does his best work. So it's honestly very similar, Boone, to how I think that Tate's game overlaps with Cam Ward. I think Jordan Tyson's game really overlaps with Tyler Shuck. So again, I had my concerns about Jordan Tyson pre-draft. I still have some concerns about him ever becoming like a number one wide receiver. There's still some areas of growth he needs to kind of overcome. He needs to get done here, but I feel really good about where he landed for immediate production. So if you're doing, you know, rookie drafts right now, is he the clear-cut wide receiver two to you? And how much of a drop-off is there from Tate to Tyson at two? And then if he is that wide receiver two for you?
He's not for me, but I don't blame anyone who wants to put him there. I still really like Mekhi Lemon, and I think even though they went out and got Eli Stowers, I think that that landing spot for Lemon with the Eagles, I was worried as he was falling in that first round. I was like, oh no, I got this one totally wrong. This guy's falling out of the spot where we want him to go. And even though he went 20th, he goes to an Eagles offense where we expect AJ Brown to be gone, and I think he's going to get a ton of opportunity there, and I really like the talent. I'm not going to argue with anybody that wants to put Tyson as the second receiver. And I think all these guys, when I talked earlier about the top five picks in rookie drafts, it's Love, it's the three receivers, and it's Mendoza. Those are the clear top five picks. If you want to shuffle them up and put them in any order you want, I'm okay with that. For me, though, I'm looking at it right now. I have Love, Tate. I have Lemon, actually, above Mendoza. And then I have Tyson at five. It's no knock on Tyson. I think he's right there with Lemon, but I just have it in that order for me personally, because I think Olave is there and potentially going to slow the production a little bit and the volume that he's getting. The other thing I will say, and one of the things that happens, you know, during the draft every year, we have a lot of takes and, you know, we're looking at some of these like dynasty stashes before the draft. One of the guys I brought up, Jalen Polk, all the fun we had with that one. We got to pour one out. It's over now for Jalen Polk. They made a bunch of investments at receiver. That dream, he can go fishing all he wants with Tyler Shuck. That is not happening. There is no redemption there, unfortunately. So if you picked him up when we said that, you could drop him now.
There's a large section of Saints Twitter. Shout out to Adam and Ryan from the Saints Block Party podcast who've had me on, and somehow I've gotten into the mix of this. There's a large segment of Saints Twitter that's like true diehard Devon Vele truthers. Like, even when I was tweeting about Tyson after round one, there's a couple of them like, is he even going to outsnap Devon Vele? I'm like, I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to outsnap Devon Vele if those hamstrings hold up, buddy. I'm pretty sure. So there's a lot of people that had like some Saints, you know, deep sleepers in their wide receiver room that maybe they're kind of pouring one out for. So I agree with you on the Jalen Polk point. But let's get to your next winner here, Boone. And this time we're not talking about rookie. We're talking about a veteran fallout. Who's a winner to you from the NFL draft?
Yeah, we'll mix a couple of veterans in there today. And I think Rashee Rice has to be mentioned, right? And you can go back to what we said earlier, that Carnell Tate was somebody we were penciling in potentially to the Chiefs in the first round. That didn't happen. They really haven't made any major investments at receiver. So now you look at him still being in that same role that he's been in the last few years. And we can talk all we want about he gets manufactured touches and the way they use him in the offense kind of inflates his stats. That doesn't matter. He's had some off-field issues. The league has already come out and said he's not going to face any punishment for that this year. Now he doesn't have any additional new competition that we have to worry about, especially a guy like Tate could have shown up there and been that true outside receiver for them. Nope, this offense is still constructed the same way that it was before. And if you look at what Rice has done the last few years, man, like, it's hard to push him down the fantasy rankings now. Top five fantasy receiver on a per-game basis last year. You go back, he got injured. It was a very small sample size in 2024, but through those first three games, was a top six fantasy receiver on a per game basis. You can even go back to his rookie year in 2023, top 15 wide receiver over the final 10 games that season. So it's been very clear the idea that they have for him, how they've been using him, and it is produced for fantasy. And Harmon, it's going to continue to produce. Like, how do you not take this guy as at worst a top 10 fantasy receiver? If not looking at him as potentially a top five, top six guy, fantasy-wise, I don't see how you could push him out of that mix unless he goes out and does something foolish, you know, off the field and gets himself in more trouble, because it's not just a one kind of thing. It's been several issues that he's gotten into. Pattern. But we're not talking about that right now. If people out there want to look at him and say they aren't happy with what he's doing off the field, they want to shy away, they want to trade him away in Dynasty, I get it. But we're looking at his fantasy outlook right now. And fantasy-wise, this year and beyond, it still looks pretty good. He survived the draft.
He survived the draft. The Chiefs went defense with their first four picks, cornerback Mansoor Delane, defensive tackle Peter Woods in the first round, R. Mason Thomas in round two. That was the player, by the way, that Daniel Jeremiah wanted to stand on the table for mock draft Monday. They took a safety in round four. They didn't start hitting offense until the fifth round, although I will say, I did like their fifth round pick, Cyrus Allen. That guy can play. Okay. Like I like me some Cyrus Allen. He's a really good route runner, really good separator, but he's a fifth round pick. So to your point, yes, Rashee Rice absolutely survived the draft here. And man, he is someone that I was doing my early rankings today. I think I'm going to have him as, you know, again, as long as things stay the way they are right now, no new wide receivers added. You know, he obviously stays clean off the field. Patrick Mahomes' rehab continues to go well. I mean, yeah, I'm going to probably have him as my wide receiver eight right now, just between Nico Collins and Drake London. And I love Drake London. You know, as a player, I would take Drake London 10 times out of 10 over Rashee Rice. But Drake London's in this Falcons offense with like Michael Penix and, you know, Tua. I'm not really jazzed up about that. You know, I'm not even sure how many slot snaps he's going to get. I got a lot of questions there. So, yeah, I for me, early rankings, Rashee Rice is wide receiver eight, and I'm surprised that they have kind of doubled down on this wide receiver room. They must really believe that Xavier Worthy was banged up all last year and they just didn't get enough out of him, and they're going to get more this year. Maybe that's true. Maybe Cyrus Allen is the next Puka Nacua, you know, fifth-round pick. I tend to doubt it, but again, a player I really, really liked. But still, as things stand right now, the runway is completely clear for Rashee Rice to be, yeah, that top eight receiver. Where do you kind of have him ballparked rank early at this point?
Even higher now as wide receiver six. I've moved him ahead of Drake London. I moved him ahead of Justin Jefferson. Still a lot of questions to answer about those guys in terms of those offenses. I'm still positive about them. I feel good about those guys, but I just don't see how you can deny Rice unless an injury pops up or unless we hear something about Mahomes where he's going to sit out for the first 4 weeks or something like that. That could potentially change the projection. But even if that occurs, you still want these guys at the most important point of the fantasy season. And if Mahomes misses a little time early in the year, if he isn't 100% coming off the injury, he will be eventually, and Rice will just be rocking and rolling for your fantasy team.
For my next winner, I'm going to go with actually kind of a veteran point, but more of a meta point. And this one dawned on me in two ways, Boone. I think that the veteran running backs across the league are huge winners here. Number one, obviously, it's the bad class, right? We talked about it. There's not a lot of running backs that are going to come in here and upset the apple cart in some of these committees. Like, the guys who we think are going to get the most touches are going to get the most touches. The other part of it, and I mentioned this earlier, was just how many blocking, you know, tight ends went in the third round this year, late second round, third round type range. It's pretty clear. And even James Gladstone, who made one of those picks, a blocking tight end that kind of had, you know, Nate Tice scratching his head a little bit when that pick was made during our live draft show. Nate Borkircher, I believe, is if I'm saying that correctly, when he was drafted, you know, James Gladstone said in the post-draft presser, well, the trend of the league right now is these heavy personnel packages, and we want to be following that trend, which I thought was kind of an interesting admission that, like, you usually don't hear GMs saying, like, yeah, we're doing what everyone else is doing. We're getting on board with that. But you know what? They're not the only ones doing that. Everybody's kind of getting on board with that right now. These heavy personnel packages, reinvigorating the run game, you know, lighter boxes. We're going to try to run through those lighter boxes at this point in the NFL. And I think the fallout from that, Boone, is I was doing early rankings today. This is probably the best I've felt about running backs in a long, long time. Like, I'm not that some of all these guys are going to be great fantasy picks. There's going to be landmines here, of course. I mean, I'm getting into like the 30s and kind of being able to tell myself a story about how this works out for some of these running backs here. So I don't know if you feel the same way, but it goes pretty deep into my running backs. So I'm making some tough choices at like running back 22 to running back 30-ish, being like, man, I kind of like all these guys, and I feel like I'm slighting some of these players by how low I'm ranking them. I just feel as if running backs are coming out of this entire NFL draft process, both because of the lack of competition, but the way the league is trending, these veteran running backs are looking like some pretty good picks this year.
Yeah, and there were some veteran free agents who got signed that we got pretty interested in, right? Part of that, I think the reason why teams were aggressive going out and signing those guys were because they knew there weren't going to be that many answers at running back in the draft. So that makes complete sense. I also think like it's been known that these blocking tight ends have been getting bigger and bigger contracts over the years. And every time it happens, everyone goes, really? Like that guy? And part of that, I think, is probably the fantasy community's fault, because we're always looking for pass catching tight ends who are going to put up these big seasons. Yeah. But as it's gone that way, it makes a lot of sense for teams to invest and draft these guys in potentially valuable spots, like on day two, to try to get them under rookie deals as opposed to having to pay them bigger contracts. So I think that is totally interesting. I think if you look more specifically too here at some of the veterans, there was a big group there in the top 10 in terms of teams picking in that range, where we were wondering which backfield was going to get nuked. Was it going to be the Titans? Was it going to be the Commanders? Was it going to be the Giants? All those guys survived. Incredible, right? It didn't happen. We didn't see Jeremiah Love end up going to them. Now, we don't even know whether they would have taken him or not, because the Cardinals jump up. They take him at third overall. We don't have to have that conversation right now. If you want to spend the third overall pick in a running back for fantasy, I love it, because that means you are very invested in that player. And now I have complete faith that you were going to use that guy. I also think that one tells us that James Conner coming back from an injury at his age, he's probably not going to have a big role. And I think Trey Benson, that ship has just passed us, right? Like, he had an injury last year. There's been some talk about his recovery this offseason. I don't think Trey Benson has a ton of fantasy value anymore because of this move, because of them bringing in Tyler Allgeier. But you go get Cam Scadaboo. He's looking pretty good right now. And if you want to include Tyron Tracy Jr. in that mix, because Scadaboo's coming off an injury, both those guys are very interesting values for fantasy. Tony Pollard, we'll see what happens here. I want to talk a little bit about a running back that they took on day three, who I think could get in the mix later. Tony Pollard could potentially be cut. I don't know if they're going to do that now, because they didn't get a top back that could replace him. So right now he's looking interesting. Tajay Spears, if you want to grab his backup, or Nick Singleton, we can spoil it. The guy that I'm going to talk about later is Nick Singleton, player that I talked about on our show last week, and I like this landing spot for him. And then for the Commanders, is it going to be Rashad White? Is it going to be JCM? One of these guys is going to step up. They also drafted Katron Allen late. He could get in the mix here as well, but these backfields now are in play when we did not think that was going to be the case for at least one of them. So yeah, it's a very interesting draft. I think the point's well made by you that veteran running backs are in a great spot now, and that's why in the 20s and potentially even into the 30s, you could look at some of these guys as being fantasy starters on your team this year.
Yeah, shoot, even guys like Bashaul Tutin comes out of this draft really well. They didn't take a back in Jacksonville. They were one of these teams that invested in a blocking tight end. The Pittsburgh Steelers with Rico Dowdle, like, they got a left tackle at the like, their offensive line is looking really good. So yeah, Again, I go pretty deep into my running back rankings, find a lot of appealing players. And on the inverse of that, and obviously this is something we'll unpack over the course of the offseason, I go through some of my wide receivers. It gets pretty late early at the wide receiver position. So there's definitely some kind of potential tough spots there, and we'll pick through the depth of that position over the course of the offseason. But let's get to your next winner here, Boone. Who is your third winner from the NFL draft?
Well, this is one that I got wrong, and there were rumors that this was going to happen before the draft, that Jadarian Price was going to end up going to the Seahawks at 32. I saw the player. I didn't think he needed to go in the first round. I wonder if they didn't take him there, where would he actually have gone based on how late we saw running backs fall in the draft? But regardless, they spent up. They got him. They got that extra year on his contract they can keep him for. And I know running backs going late in the first round hasn't always equated to fantasy success, even with the Seahawks, right? Rashad Penny was a guy that went in that range. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Sony Michel. Like, there has been some busts in that area of the draft. So this is far from a slam dunk, a guy that we can absolutely say he is going to be a great fantasy pick. But in a year where this rookie class, I mean, like we said, after the first five picks, it's pretty wide open. I think you can make a very strong argument that you could take Price as early as the 106. That might end up getting you in trouble, but I don't know if I feel that strongly about some of the other players in that range based on their landing spots. So I think he's in that conversation. And I think he's also in the conversation as a potential low-end RB2, high-end RB3 in a backfield where now he is positioned as the clubhouse leader. Like, he is going to be the guy. He is a better talent than Emmanuel Wilson, who they brought in this offseason. Another guy that we could pour some out for, George Helani, our dynasty shares of George Helani. Doesn't seem like that is going to turn into much. He might work in a little bit here. Obviously, Zach Charbonnet coming back from a serious injury. We're not going to see him until late in the season. So this potentially is Price's backfield. As long as he can answer the call, he's a strong runner. He's a guy that could be a sustaining back in that offense for them. I think that's what they want. They're trying to replace Kenneth Walker. Price is going to be that guy. So this one was very exciting, not just because the draft capital, but also the landing spot and going to a Seahawks offense where they're trying to defend that Super Bowl. And he is going to be a big part of that, in my opinion.
Now, I'm with you that one good point that you made there, and I want to unpack this more maybe when we do the Dynasty Rookie Draft Show, but just again, where Jadarian Price is going to slot in. But the history of running backs in the first round, it looks really good at those top picks. Like, usually the league and those of us on the outside even are good about picking, like, okay, this guy's, you know, again, you can argue with the value, as you mentioned with Jeremiah Love, but usually we know if this guy's going to go on the top of the draft, we know this guy is going to be a really good player in the league. And that usually does end up working out. It is that back half of the first round that's littered with, you know, definitely some misses at the running back position in terms of those first round picks in the back half. That being said, though, and again, I do think it's worth noting that it felt like Seattle really wanted to trade out of that pick. They were kind of broadcasting that all throughout the week, even day of. They're trying to trade out of that pick. They wanted somebody to come up. They wanted to get more picks. So you can kind of say, like, well, were they even really that bullish about Jadarian Price? Were they okay missing out on him? They didn't really feel that, but they still made the first round pick. So it's still something that is a variable to consider, and we'll unpack that. Nevertheless, I did leave this one for you because I think it's the biggest layup of the entire process. Like, yeah, Jadarian Price is a huge winner here. Boone, there was not many other depth charts like across the league where there's just a smooth sailing spot to that running back one position. And that is what Jadarian Price gets here with the Seattle Seahawks. So I think from a dynasty angle, it is a little tricky, you know, slotting him in versus some of these rookie wide receivers that landed in bad spots. But again, we'll talk about that in the Dynasty Rookie Draft. There's just no question, though, that he comes away as a big winner, especially for redraft this year, where Zach Charbonnet is not going to be healthy until much later this calendar year, if he's 100% at all. Where are you kind of thinking ballpark range ranking-wise for Jadarian Price in redraft?
So in redraft, I have him as RB29, and that's just baking in the idea that Charbonnet could potentially factor in late in the season, right? So that kind of bumps him down. If it wasn't for that, if you just want to look at first half or the first three quarters of the fantasy season, I would have him as a low-end RB2 right in the mix with guys like Bashaul Tuten, who also has a lot of uncertainty around his profile, where Chris Rodriguez could get involved in a big way there. So as much as we like the guys in that range, there are still some question marks with those guys. So you can tell yourself the story, like you said, but you could move a guy like Price up pretty quickly if he can handle this job. If he proves to the coaching staff that he's ready, the opportunity is there for him.
I've got him at running back 26, so we're pretty much in the same sort of range there. And again, as I continue to look at it, it's kind of, do you want to take the upside of the unknown, the young player who is explosive, who's going to be in this offense that really wants to hammer those outside zone runs, or do you want to go with more of a veteran like a David Montgomery, DeAndre Swift type, Rico Dowdle? I don't know. So we got a lot of time to sort of settle on those rankings, but no question he is somebody that there might not have been another team in the NFL. I'm sure there's one that I'm not thinking of that does have that clear runway to a starting running back position. There's not many teams that I think I would have just said, hey, yeah, you can go ahead and let's just moonwalk this guy. Let's just green light him. Come on up. He's a top 30 running back in redraft rankings. He does land in one of those spots. So huge winner is Jadarian Price. I want to get to my third winner here, and that is Dazon Stribling, San Francisco 49ers wide receiver, drafted at 33rd overall. We could definitely have a conversation about Dazon Stribling going ahead of Denzel Boston in particular. I know we were talking about Denzel Boston later, and whether people thought he was going to be a guy that was going to go 33rd overall. I didn't know that he was going to go 33rd overall. I would have still taken Denzel Boston over Dazon Stribling, but the San Francisco 49ers did take Dazon Stribling at 33rd overall. They stuck and picked there. In fairness to the point I just made about, Jadarian Price, sounded like San Francisco was trying to trade out of that pick as well. So there is something to be said about that. But they did really like Dazon Stribling. And this is I'm so glad that he was one of the guys that I got to late and did a full profile on him, Boone, because my biggest takeaway from charting Dazon Stribling was that this guy is like a classic coach's favorite wide receiver. He blocks his ass off. He might be the best blocking receiver in the class. He's got great hands. He's really tough and physical after the catch. And his two best routes in reception perception are the dig route and the slant route. He showed I don't think he's a complete player by any means. He does still need to kind of refine some of his game. And he definitely went, I expected him to go on day two. He still went even earlier on day two than I expected. So I'm not saying he's a finished product by any means, but he does have like kind of the makings of a good release package, working those routes against man coverage over the middle of the field. All of that sounds like a Shanahan receiver. All of that sounds like what Juwan Jennings has been for this team in recent years. So I think that Dazon Stribling landed in a pretty ideal spot for his skill set, and he landed with some really good draft capital here in terms of that 33rd overall selection. So Dazon Stribling, a late riser in the NFL draft process, Boone, but I really understood why he was a late riser, and I think it's because he's that coach's favorite wide receiver. So no shock that Kyle Shanahan, who's got a lot of sway in that draft room, decides to take Stribling at 33rd overall. What did you make of the selection?
We'll never know this, but I'd be curious how much the interest that so many teams had in him, apparently. And there was talk that he couldn't even make it to all the different meetings that he wanted to, that they wanted him to go to, right? That's how many teams were potentially looking to bring him in and have him on a visit before the draft. So I wonder just how teams play that. I mean, you see it happen in fantasy drafts as well. When you know people like a player, how early do you need to go to get that guy to make sure you end up with him? The 49ers end up spending very high capital to get him, which is strong. That's good for his dynasty outlook. I don't know that in redraft he's going to have that much value unless we see injuries hit this receiving core, which, let's face it, we've seen injuries hit this team pretty badly over the years, right? Especially in recent seasons. And now they bring in Mike Evans, who's going to be 33 years old, has a long line of injuries on his resume as well. I talked about it last week, though. The 49ers were a pretty sneaky good landing spot for a receiver. Ricky Pearsall, who I still like, I have a lot of belief in him. He's dealt with a ton of injuries. George Kittle coming back from injury. He's on the older side. He's going to be 33 as well. Brandon Ayuk, we know, is good. It's hilarious to see reports come out today that, oh, the Commanders might be interested in Brandon Ayuk. Yeah, big surprise. We've been talking about that for months. Everyone knows that. That is not a surprise whatsoever. Christian Kirk was brought in this year. How much does he have left in the tank? We haven't seen a lot of production from him the last couple seasons. Jennings, who you mentioned, he's a free agent. Doesn't seem like they're going to bring him back. Even Kendrick Bourne, he's in Arizona. So this depth chart actually did need a receiver. Taking him there is very interesting. I just don't know. Are we going to see him produce in redraft, or is this going to be one where we're kind of seeing things, a slow development? Because also Kyle Shanahan, not normally one to throw rookies out there and give them a super big role on the offense either. So a little bit of questions around Stribling, but certainly now someone who is in the mix. I don't know that I would take him in the late first, but certainly an early second round pick in dynasty rookie drafts based on the draft capital and the offense that he went to.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. Winner in terms of he rises in the second round of dynasty rookie drafts. I like that angle. And I would put him probably not on the in traditional redraft leagues like draftable radar, but I do think later best ball pick, waiver wire speed dial, I think he graduates to that group here, because I do love the fit of the offense here. And just real quick, we had a good quote from Kyle Shanahan when asked about if Dazon Stribling would potentially be a Juwan Jennings replacement in the blocking game. Shanahan said, quote, "For me, I don't ever start watching receivers block. It all has to do with the football. I really fell in love with him as a route runner, how fast he is, how big he is, how good his hands are, how physical he is with the ball." All of that is true. I will just say, Kyle, maybe a little bit, and I mean, maybe don't start with the blocking, but brother, we all know that's important to you, okay? Maybe it doesn't start with the blocking, but we know it's important, okay? We know it is. We know it's a thing. When Brandon Ayuk got himself in the doghouse, how he got himself out of that doghouse was he started grinding. He started blocking. That was how he earned the opportunities. I think that's how Juwan Jennings earned opportunities with this team. So it doesn't start with that, but it's a big part of why I think Stribling is going to grow and develop in this offense. So I definitely think he is a winner. Let's stick on day two receivers here, Boone. Give me another winner for you from the NFL draft.
We're just going to go on a long run of receivers here, but I'm excited about the landing spot for Chris Bell. He goes to the Dolphins. We knew that was a wide open depth chart. They needed to make some moves. They drafted a few guys. They also drafted Caleb Douglas actually ahead of Chris Bell. But I think part of the reason for that is Chris Bell coming off an ACL tear, right? And we don't know when he's going to be ready. That occurred in November. He had his surgery in December. Timing wise, it's possible he could be ready early in the season. I don't think the Dolphins are really competing for much this year. I don't think they're going to be in the playoff mix. I don't think there's much reason to rush him back. So I think we're not going to see him until later in the year. Regardless, man, what an opportunity in this Dolphins receiving core. You look at the depth chart right now, Malik Washington, Jalen Tolbert, Tutu Atwell, and then Caleb Douglas. And later on, they drafted Kevin Coleman Jr. There's not a number one receiver in that bunch. And I don't know that Chris Bell really profiles as a true number one receiver. I think in the long run, probably better suited to be a number two in an offense. He's more of like that physical possession type guy. I would hope that they would figure out the right way to use him here. But yeah, he is somebody that they got him at an injury discount. I think fantasy managers are going to get him at an injury discount. And yet I think he's somebody that had a lot of potential and now lands in an offense on a depth chart where he could rise very quickly once he's healthy. Certainly a player that I'm excited about taking and potentially getting a big time value on. Like I said, there's a lot of guys in the draft this year that we're looking at. Stribling is one of them for me, where I don't know that he's going to have a ton of value right away. So we're going to have to draft him and then sit on it. And hopefully he emerges. I think Bell is another player like that, where you could get a lot more value and just be happy that you're getting that discount.
Yeah, really liked the pick of Chris Bell. It's the type of upside swing that they needed in that room there. Obviously, we talked a lot about the veterans that were in the room entering the NFL draft. And yeah, when they took Caleb Douglas, I mean, I'll be honest, I was shocked by that. One, just consensus rankings wise, he was not listed that high. Two, talk about losers from the NFL draft. Big loser, Matt Harmon here, because I charted 31 wide receivers for this year's class, most that I've ever done. I'm never going to get to the entire class, right? I'm pretty sure like a record amount of wide receivers have been drafted or something this year. I heard that stat during the broadcast. So talk about like needing to start earlier and earlier. I am a loser here because clearly I need to do more work than even the amount of work I did this offseason, because two guys went in the third that I didn't chart. One of them was Caleb Douglas. Another one was the guy that the Bears took. I actually did chart both of them this morning, so I am going to have profiles up on them. Got that done here. And I will say, Caleb Douglas, I still don't know if I would have taken him in the third round. He reminds me a ton of Quentin Johnson. Like, even just everything, the way he moves, way he runs his routes, like he looks, even some of the way that Quentin Johnson like annoyingly ducks his head when he runs his route. Caleb Douglas is, it's almost like he's doing an impression of Quentin Johnson. That being said, like, I kind of see what they thought from him, like big lanky receiver on the outside. Chris Bell, though, is a better prospect. And I think Chris Bell, obviously the ACL, some of the fact, again, he's one of these guys just like Douglas that plays on one side of the field. He comes from a stripped down route tree offense. So there's a level of development that needs to happen with Chris Bell. Plus, you know, I don't know if a lot of teams are going to love the fact that he was pretty clearly showing up as quarterback all year. I don't mind it. I love that he's got an aggressive demeanor to him, but I don't know that every team necessarily loved that from Chris Bell. But I do agree with you. Him landing here, it's a rather wide open depth chart, and they need someone of his skill set. Like, you just think about it. Malik Willis, play action heavy offense. They took, you know, big Caden Proctor in the first round, so they clearly want to be a run heavy offense. Right tackle out of Alabama is Caden Proctor. Think about just those crossing routes, those runway routes on play action. Like, Chris Bell fits really smoothly into an offense like that. So I'm with you. I think this is a really good landing spot for him, even though he's technically not the first receiver that the Dolphins drafted yesterday.
Yeah, and I will say, too, for dynasty managers out there, if you do take a guy like Stribling, if you take a guy like Bell, don't panic sell when they're not doing much early on. No. Hold on to them. If you're taking them, you have to be patient, and you have to wait for that role to potentially grow and them to get their opportunity. Don't go crazy and get worried and all of a sudden trade them for 10 cents on the dollar, because you're going to miss out if you don't wait.
That's a good point. And I think just the way that the Dolphins attacked that receiver position in the draft, they did get three very different complementary players. And this was kind of what I expected them to do as a Packers-based front office. I think Douglas is a little bit of just a true X, maybe a little bit sacrificial player there. So he makes sense in that role. Chris Bell, you probably want to do use him off ball as a Z receiver, have him beat man coverage on runway routes. And then Kevin Coleman Jr., nice like sleeper slot player as well. So obviously they'll compete with Jalen Tolbert, Tutu Atwell, and Malik Washington in those different roles. But I do kind of like them just throwing a lot of darts, a lot of different body types, getting him in the mix there. So he is definitely a winner. I'll wrap up our winner section here with another day two wide receiver. And this was Antonio Williams Boone. And let me tell you what, on our live draft show, when Antonio Williams getting selected by the Commanders got me fired up, man, for a couple of reasons. One, we had gone a little while without a wide receiver pick for a minute there. So I needed the juice. Okay. We had had a wide receiver taken. Jeremy Bernard was taken at the 15th pick of the second round. We didn't get another wide receiver till Antonio Williams went off the board with the 7th pick of the third round. So I was fired up to see Williams come off the board there, get a little receiver run. And I love this landing spot for Antonio Williams. We know that they are going to acquire Brandon Ayuk at some point. I don't think a trade will happen, but otherwise, we've been showing Washington's depth chart for so long now, and Treylon Burks as the other starting outside receiver across from Terry McLaurin, Luke McCaffrey as the starting slot receiver. This is one of the teams that just desperately needed receiver help, and it's an offense that I think is going to play, you know, a lot of heavy personnel packages, but I think they'll spread it a little bit too, which should allow Antonio Williams to be the slot Z receiver. Obviously, again, if Ayuk gets into camp and he's locked in and in shape, which are and healthy, those are three massive ifs, Williams would probably play behind him. But there's also a chance that one, two, three, or none of those things happen for Brandon Ayuk. And Antonio Williams is just the second receiver for Washington this year. So I really liked Williams. I think he's a high floor player for a team that needs immediate wide receiver help. So big win, Antonio Williams going to the Commanders on a wide open wide receiver depth chart with a good quarterback and an evolving offense here.
Yeah, just a great opportunity ahead of him. And you don't have to convince me, because I said earlier, I wrote that article about some of the sneaky players that went on day two who I think could have fantasy value. This was the very first player I wrote about. I was equally excited about him, Harmon. And for all the reasons you just said, and I do think, as much as now we are probably going to see a ton of Brandon Ayuk headlines, a lot of talk, when are the 49ers going to release him? When is he going to end up with the Commanders? Which seems very inevitable at this point. I do think it's important to remind everyone what you were talking about there. The idea that players that go down this path and don't have a lot of production for a couple of years and make some sort of strange decisions, coming back from that is a very difficult road. And we do not see a lot of guys come back and regain their form that they had. And now it has been several seasons since that great Ayuk year. I had him on a ton of teams back then. I have traded him everywhere since then. I've gotten completely off the ride. And I do think if he goes to Washington, there is a chance that he could get back to being a productive player. But I think at this point, it's a long shot in my mind. So go out, invest in other guys. I will admit, Treylon Burks is on a bunch of my dynasty benches just in case he got that chance. Because there were couple moments near the end of last season where it was like, hey, maybe this guy actually is impressing, you know, the coaches. Maybe he is potentially going to carve out a role here. But bringing in Antonio Williams, he certainly jumps him on the depth chart. And yeah, there's going to be a chance where he could be a very productive player in year one, potentially outproduce some of the guys that we were valuing as prospects ahead of him amongst the receivers. I think that's not crazy at all. I think the path is laid out for him to potentially have a very strong first season. I think he's somebody I'm going to be targeting heavily in dynasty rookie drafts.
Yeah, everywhere from like the late first round, some of those guys that got drafted there, all the way to the couple of the guys that went ahead of him in the second round. Definitely, I think Antonio Williams could be drafted and produce from a fantasy standpoint, outproduce some of those guys. I got a little distracted there because just finally saw that at pick 254, the Colts took Deion Burks. Finally, someone takes Deion Burks in the seventh round. I mean, my God, what did Deion Burks do wrong? I know he had a terrible production profile that J.J. Zacharyson laughed at me about on his show, but my God, Deion Burks, seventh round pick. He goes to the Colts, by the way. Nice little opportunity, Indianapolis Colts. Okay, he didn't make it on the show, by the way. Boone, Josh Downs definitely got to be a winner coming out of the draft.
I was just going to say, Deion Burks better not. Deion Burks better not be the guy that prevents Josh Downs from emerging. It better not be like one of these players, like Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is on that team now. Like, no, we have to see Downs do it this year. I do think that Tyler Warren at tight end is also going to be heavily factored in. It might even be the second pass catcher in that offense, but this is the year for Josh Downs. Yeah, we're going to get all on board again.
This is absolutely the year. Good quotes from Coach Speak Index that I retweeted, where Shane Steichen said stated a few days ago that he expects more targets for Josh Downs in 2026. Indy's going to give Josh Downs some reps on the outside this spring to see if he can handle it soon. But for now, good to see Deion Burks get drafted. Not just get drafted, but also get drafted by a team that has some opportunity. So thank God. Let's finally get a little negative here. Let's talk losers. Who's your first loser coming out of the NFL draft?
I'm going to cheat and I'm going to talk about two guys. And it's two running backs who have been backups, but who I think fantasy managers, and I think they probably were hoping that they were going to get more opportunity and potentially eventually emerge as number one guys. I don't think that is going to happen now. And the first guy to talk about is RJ Harvey with the Broncos. And yes, we talked about J.K. Dobbins and his injury history and how every season he gets hurt, and Harvey was the next man up. And last year, we saw Harvey actually play pretty well. He's pretty good for fantasy down the stretch last season when Dobbins was out, and he helped a lot of people win fantasy titles. And yet everything the Broncos have done since then essentially told us that they don't view him as a lead back, right? They were flirting with a bunch of veteran running backs in free agency. They brought a ton of rookie backs in the pre-draft process. And then they go out and they take Jonah Coleman. Now, they didn't take Jonah Coleman until the fourth round, so factor that in terms of the draft capital and all that sort of stuff. But Jonah Coleman was someone who I thought could potentially be the second best running back in this draft. And now he's going to a good offense where we have a veteran starter who has a terrible injury history, who I just expect now, I bake it into my projections that J.K. Dobbins is going to get hurt. I hate doing that. I don't want to call anyone injury prone. Dobbins is the closest thing to it. And when that happens, I don't think it's going to be the RJ Harvey show. I think RJ Harvey now will stay in his role as that complimentary back. And I think Jonah Coleman steps up as that early down player and a guy who I think could actually do it all, but who really profiles as that quality early down guy who meshes perfectly with Harvey, right? We could see these two form a really strong backfield for a long time here in a very good offense. And then the other guy is Tyler Allgeier. And I don't know if he knew this was a possibility when he signed with the Cardinals, but there was talk last year that he was going to want to leave Atlanta, that he was going to want to go out and find an opportunity where he could be the starter. He goes to Arizona. Said earlier, James Conner, older, coming off an injury. Trey Benson coming off an injury, hasn't really done much. So, hey, Tyler Allgeier steps in. Looks like he's going to be that number one back. And what do the Cardinals do? They go out and spend the third overall pick on Jeremiah Love, who is essentially another John Robinson type player where there is no doubt that he is the top back in that backfield. And Tyler Allgeier going back to being maybe a touchdown or bust flex play if he gets some opportunity around the goal line, but probably more likely that one injury away guy. Still has value for fantasy, and yet you have to look at him as a loser after this draft. Both these guys, I just don't see the path. Barring injuries, barring potentially multiple injuries for Harvey at this point, these guys getting into the lead back roles in their backfields.
Tyler Allgeier, man. What a bummer. What a bummer if you are Tyler Allgeier.
Over 1,000 yards as a rookie, man. He showed it. It's not even like the guy came into the league and hasn't done it yet. He did it. Yeah, he did it. Now, he would only be an early down guy. He doesn't really offer much in the passing game. But I would also like to see him get an opportunity for fantasy. Why not give us another potential back? And yet, not going to happen. Not going to happen for him in Arizona.
Not going to happen for him in Arizona. And like, this is just the way it goes with running backs sometimes. Really, yeah, like these good players. I mean, it happens at every position, but especially a running back. Like, well, shoot. Big old first round draft pick just comes in here and there you go, buddy. Like, you're in the backup role again, which stinks. But yeah, Tyler Allgeier. And obviously, this is... Even though we have questions about Atlanta over the last few years and that ecosystem, this is definitely we're going to unpack the Jeremiah Love outlook in this ecosystem. Although I think it's better than people maybe are giving it credit for. But still, not the same level of opportunity where Tyler Allgeier was even like an efficient producer on low touches in the last few seasons. So we'll see what his goal line role looks like. I'm sure there's going to be some talk about that as it relates to Jeremiah Love after Tyler Allgeier was definitely an annoyance to people that had Bijan on their roster the last few years. And the reason he was an annoyance, Boone, is because he was good back. He was good back, and now he's not going to get a chance to shine here. RJ Harvey, man, what a whiplash the last 365 days have been for RJ Harvey. Because I'm sure you remember this. We weren't working together yet at the time. You had yet to arrive here at Yahoo, but I'm sure you remember like this and just like the talk of, and probably you were talking about it on your shows at the time, like 95% of fantasy analysts were talking about how gassed up Sean Payton was about taking RJ Harvey. Remember the post-draft pressers about RJ Harvey where Sean Payton's like, hey man, I watched him and then I told everybody, okay, shut up. Like we're not talking about this guy. We can't let the secret out. For them to reach like a full round, if not a round and a half, to take RJ Harvey in the second round of last year's draft. That's how excited they were about him. And then this year, it's like they just couldn't wait to get more competition in here for him. So I feel like if you drafted RJ Harvey in your dynasty rookie draft last year, you've got to be feeling some pretty serious whiplash here with him. Like, what do you think? Does he just become this kind of pass catching back? And like, what kind of fantasy relevance is there for a guy like that when there is a clear cut mandate by the team that he's going to be in some level of a committee here?
Yeah, it really seems like he's going to be that change of pace guy. Mix in on early downs, so we use pass catching downs. And last year when Dobbins was healthy, he still had value. He was finding the end zone. He was putting up like RB3 style numbers for fantasy. It wasn't like he was a total bust at that point in the year. So I think he's still going to do that. It's just, he's a loser because the days of potentially seeing him completely take over this backfield and be the lead guy, I just don't think that's going to happen. So the chances of him emerging as an RB2 or greater for fantasy, I don't see that happening. Maybe I'm overvaluing Coleman. Maybe I'm relying too much on my pre-draft, you know, prospect profile for him. But I really see Coleman as that perfect complement there. And even if it is Harvey with slightly more than him, like even if it works out in some type of 50-50 style committee, it just caps Harvey's upside for fantasy.
Yeah, you're really hoping that RJ Harvey becomes like the poor man's Alvin Kamara and that Jonah Coleman becomes like the poor man's Mark Ingram, to use a tortured former Sean Payton Saints team analogy. Pretty big pie in the sky outcome there. And the Broncos obviously have to become like the prime Saints level offensive efficiency type teams, which I like what the Broncos are building on offense, but that is again a pretty big pie in the sky outcome here. My first loser, and it's a set of players here. I think we have to call both Kenyon Sadiq and Omar Cooper Jr. losers here, unfortunately. I don't want to come in here and just say like, oh, they went to the Jets. Ha 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 ha. That sucks. The Jets sucks. That's not what I'm going to do with my analysis here, because I actually think like the Jets offense, Boone, how bad is this Jets offense realistically going to be? Like this actually looks on paper like a pretty good offense here. I know Geno Smith obviously is coming off a disastrous season, but if he can be just like a serviceable starting quarterback, there's way too much skill position talent for this offense to be a disaster. Plus they have two good bookend tackles, but it's the fact that there's suddenly like a glut of guys that could be credible pass catchers on this Jets offense that kind of has me wondering like how many targets realistically can Sadiq and Omar Cooper Jr. get this year? I mean, there's a real chance that we're looking at the fourth and fifth most targeted players on this offense. There's Garrett Wilson, there's Adonai Mitchell, and I think year one, Omar Cooper Jr. probably profiles as the heavy slot player, not pushing AD Mitchell or Garrett Wilson off the field. We'll see. I could be wrong about that, but that's my early thought about it. And then beyond that, Kenyon Sadiq comes in here. They just took Mason Taylor in last year's draft, and Mason Taylor probably profiles as more of an inline tight end. So how many snaps is Sadiq going to play? Therefore, how many targets is he going to get? No, by the way, Breece Hall is still a pass catcher too. Like, how do we arrive to the point now where I feel like I can't make the math work for a Jets offense?
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's weirdly become a math problem now. We're just trying to figure out where the target's going to go, and it can't go to everybody. I think it hurts Garrett Wilson, because one of the ways that he's continued to produce despite the bad quarterback play in recent years has been with volume. He's gotten enough volume where he's continued to have these 1,000-yard seasons, except for last year when he got hurt, of course. But prior to that, he put up 3,000-yard campaigns. I think he's going to have a hard time doing that now that they have a lot of talent around him. And yeah, I agree. I'm like weirdly excited about the Jets now. This is another team that's going to go from an offense that we really didn't care to watch. So now I'm very curious what this is going to look like when we see them on the field. And yet I'm with you from a fantasy standpoint. I was high on Cooper and Sadiq, and you can't be as high on them now. Now they're in that mix of mid to low end first round rookie picks who you just don't have a ton of confidence in. You don't know when it's going to happen for them. They're going to kind of have to overcome things in order to produce, and they're going to be battling each other like you were talking about there, right? Like they're going to be used in some similar ways, and that's a problem as well. So it's really unfortunate that we didn't see either of these guys go to an offense where they can immediately take on a bigger role. Now, we know some guys just come in and they're talents and they demand more targets and they demand more plays and they turn out to be great players. That's still possible here. And Adonai Mitchell has had problems throughout his career proving to coaching staffs that he can be that guy. It seems like the Jets really like him.
No question.
I mean, I told you last year, like he's that guy that I've sort of just died on that hill. I believe in the talent. I feel like at some point the light should turn on and it should come through, but he continues to make these like boneheaded mistakes along the way. We saw it last year when he got to New York, where he can produce, he can have games where he looks like he could be a number one receiver, and then all of a sudden turns around and looks like he doesn't even belong on the field. Hopefully he gets that corrected. But yeah, we're looking at this offense and saying in real life, exciting. In fantasy, I think a lot of concerns. And even the guys like Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson, who are true stars, who I think could be top 12 options in fantasy at their positions. This offense has held them back before, and I worry now it's going to hold them back sort of in a different way because they have so many mouths to feed. It's going to be a little more difficult for a guy, especially like Wilson, to get there.
I definitely think so. Again, if Wilson's going to get there, it's because this offense is going to have to overperform expectations, because I don't think he'll necessarily have the monster volume that he had. So we'll need to see an efficiency boost, which means we're going to need to see Geno Smith be way better than he was last year. And Frank Reich is still the offensive coordinator here, which is something I'm just not going to be able to get past as I'm getting myself a little bit interested in this Jets offense from a skill position talent standpoint. I do think the guy that's the bigger loser is Sadiq than Omar Cooper Jr., just because of like the way tight ends fit into offenses versus receivers. And I think Cooper is a better receiving prospect than Sadiq is. He's got a little bit more instant application to him. But the problem for Cooper is just, again, like even if we have our questions about Mitchell, which I have many questions about Mitchell, he's still the X receiver most likely on the offense. And that's what's going to make it difficult for a guy like Omar Cooper Jr. to be in two receiver sets. I would imagine the two receiver sets going to be 80 at X, Cooper, Wilson at Z, but I guess it could be Wilson X, Cooper Z. We'll have to see about that. We got a long way to go to unpack that, but give us your final loser here, Boone. Another heartbreaking landing spot for a highly drafted wide receiver you've got here.
Yeah. And I mean, our last two guys here we're going to talk about this section are both from the same team. I don't know if we want to, you know, pair them together, but for me, Denzel Boston among this rookie class, I think we had a lot of hope that he was going to go in round one. That didn't occur. Wasn't even one of the first six receivers drafted, which if you had asked me to bet on that before the draft, I would have put a lot of money down that he was definitely going to be one of the top six receivers off the board. That didn't occur. He was seventh. Ends up in Cleveland, which I think we could look at this offense, especially this passing game, and have a lot of uncertainty around the quarterback position, you know, and around the fact now that, and it's not quite like the Jets situation, but if it was just Boston going to Cleveland, even with the second round draft capital, might be a little more excited. But they took a first round receiver in Casey Concepcion, who I think is a better prospect, who I know you think is a better prospect.
Same.
So now he's going to a team where we have a new coaching staff, and perhaps Todd Monken can get this thing going in the right direction. But in the past, we have not seen this passing attack look great. One of the big problems has been that they haven't figured out their quarterback situation for a very long time. And we're going into this season with some semblance of Deshaun Watson. We don't know what he's going to be because he hasn't been doing it for a while here. Talk about a guy like Brandon Ayuk not performing for the last couple seasons. Watson has not done much for the last couple seasons. Shedeur Sanders was okay last year, had some moments, but I don't think he established himself as somebody that we can have a ton of confidence in as the quarterback there. So we don't know what we're getting from the quarterback. Now we have Concepcion there and Boston there, who I think are just going to usurp guys like Cedric Tillman and potentially even Jerry Jeudy like very quickly. I think these are better prospects. they're also competing with Harold Fannin Jr., who had a good year last year, but I think he got a lot of volume because of the deficiencies in that receiving core. Now he's going to have more competition to work with there. So it's just a bad situation on a team that I don't want to have it just come down to this, because you can overcome it. But this team often has to deal with bad weather late in the season, which can also impact pass catchers at the worst possible time in the fantasy calendar. And a guy like Boston, who's going to be that red zone threat on the outside, like, it's just, it all boils down to me not being nearly as excited about him as a prospect in Dynasty or Redraft. I might still end up with him in some places because he's probably going to fall to a range where I'm picking in the late first round. But man, can you feel really that good about him moving forward on this Browns offense? I don't feel that way.
Nope. Yeah, this is one of those, when I was on the draft show analyzing all of this happening, I was like, I love what the Browns are doing. The Browns had a great draft. They really, really had an awesome draft. I love the way that Denzel Boston and KC Concepcion complement each other. From a fantasy standpoint, a little bit difficult. I will say, hey, big winner here is whoever the Browns quarterback is going to be in 2027, because I don't think it's going to be Deshaun Watson. Like, they're going to give it one last try. They're going to give the Shedeur Sanders thing a look. I'm sure they drafted Talon Green. Maybe we get a couple Talon Green starts. I don't think their next quarterback. Yeah. I don't know. Their next quarterback is probably not on the roster. Okay. The 2027 guy. So that player's a winner. I also think Todd Monken is going to have himself a ton of fun with these guys, because there's so many versatile skill sets. I think KC can play X, Boston can play Z and slot, and KC can do all that. Like, they can, this is going to be awesome. If you're a Browns fan, invest in NFL Pro. Okay. That's my advice to you guys. It's not going to be fun to watch on Sundays. The results are not going to be fun. Watching film of this offense and seeing what Todd Monken is doing with these young, dynamic receiving talents that he's got here, that's going to be cool. That's going to be fun. Don't think the actual statistical results from us from a fantasy standpoint are going to be very fun. I'm still going to draft KC Concepcion rather bullishly in the first round of rookie drafts. It's tough kind of back and forth with me between Jadarian Price and KC Concepcion. I do think maybe it depends on what your dynasty team needs. I know that some dynasty bros would fillet me up and down for saying team need doesn't matter, but you know, I don't know. To me, that's probably how I would handle it. You guys handle it however you want. I'm still really bullish on the player, but yeah, obviously landing here, both these guys makes it a little complicated. Don't think it makes it complicated in the long term. Think it makes it complicated in the current moment here in redraft leagues, but I still think I'll take KC Boston. Not a guy that I'd be like heavily investing in necessarily. Another loser, I think, from this Browns situation, and this one, I don't know that as many people are going to talk about Boone, but this was the first guy I worried about, even honestly, even before they took Denzel Boston. Same. But then especially after they took Denzel Boston, I'm worried about Harold Fannin. Now, I say I'm worried about Harold Fannin, and then I logged in to do my tight end rankings today, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but I logged in to do my tight end rankings. I'm like, well, okay, how worried can I be relative to the other tight ends? Like, am I pushing Kyle Pitts above Harold Fannin and Travis Kelce? I don't know about all that. But what this kind of reminds me of, Boone, is Sam Laporta early in his NFL career. If you remember, Sam Laporta in his rookie year with the Detroit Lions in 2023 had 120 targets, 86 catches, just under 900 yards and 10 touchdowns. He was an awesome pick. He wasn't terrible his next season, but he dropped from 120 targets in 17 games to 83 targets in 16 games. He was a little bit more touchdown or bust that year. And the big reason for that is because in 2024, Jameson Williams emerged that year. Amon-Ra St. Brown had 141 targets in 17 games. Jameson Williams had 91 targets in 15 games ahead of Sam Laporta. And this is what we talk about all the time at the tight end position. You need to find these guys who are going to be the number one, at least number two pass catchers on their team. I think that there's a decent chance that Harold Fannin could lead this team in targets still, but it became a lot more narrow than what it was last year, when I think Fannin's awesome. This is not an anti-Harold Fannin take. I think he's a really good player, but he is a specific usage tight end going into a new scheme. And we've got a lot more target competition here on a team that we already said we have quarterback questions about. So it just reminds me a little bit of that Sam Laporta season, where I went into that year, Boone, being like, well, I don't know if I can get that excited about Jameson Williams, because, you know, Sam Laporta is coming off this great year, and Amon-Ra St. Brown is established. I was wrong about that because Jamison Williams was good enough to just leap ahead of Sam Laporta in the pecking order, because that's usually how NFL offenses work. They flow through the wide receivers, not necessarily through the tight ends. Is that about to happen here with the Cleveland Browns? I think I'm a little worried about that from a Harold Fannin perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great situational comp. I hadn't thought about that one at all, and that is an awesome one to connect the dots to, because I definitely think that's possible here. And I'm with you. I think we even might have talked about it on the show at one point in the lead up to the draft. The idea that when the Browns were rumored to potentially be in on a receiver with the sixth overall pick, that's when I started to get concerned, and I started to go like, wait, should I be moving Fannin down? And again, you can't move him down that far, but he had a chance to potentially compete with like the elite players at the position if he took a step in the right direction, got the same kind of volume or even more. And now I think he's going in the opposite direction. I think he falls now more to like the mid-range tight end ones without really having a great chance to get up there and compete with those top guys at the position. I think that's all it is. And again, we're talking about these guys as losers because their value drops a little bit. It doesn't mean that you're not going to draft these guys anywhere. Like, I do think that's important to say, right? That they are still good players over time. They could overcome their situations. And I do still like Fannin, but I don't know how you can't bump his projection down after his team just used two high picks on receivers when the fact that the receiving core was pretty bare last year, I think was a huge contributing factor to why he had the season that he did as a rookie.
Yeah, we're on the same page about that one. Not an anti-Harold Fannin take, and he could still be very good, but I do think we just got to adjust his ADP expectations, some of the projections, things that you mentioned there. Okay, last thing we're going to do here real quick before we close it out on our first of many recaps of the NFL draft. Let's give one day three pick that you're thinking about the most for fantasy football this season. Mine will not be Deion Burks, spoiler alert, but it will be a wide receiver. But Boone, I'm going to let you go first. Who's a day three rookie that you think actually might have a shot to matter in fantasy this year?
Since I knew you were obviously going to go with a receiver, I got to go with a running back. And I'm going to cheat. I'm going to mention two running backs because I spoiled the one off the top. That's Nick Singleton going to the Titans. And he was a player that I mentioned on our show last week when we were doing the wish cast thing. Someone who I thought was a lot better than just the general public perception on him has been. And I think one of the reasons why he didn't get hyped up very much was because he got injured the Senior Bowl week and wasn't able to participate in the pre-draft process at all. So there wasn't that time where you see him at the combine going out running a fast time or, you know, doing drills and looking great. We just didn't get to see that from him. So he falls very deep into the draft here, still drafted in the fifth round. I think after the fifth round, you get even more concerned. Not the guys in the sixth and the seventh round haven't emerged, but as you go deeper into the draft, the odds of a player actually turning into something for fantasy become less and less. And yet Singleton, for as far as he fell, goes to this backfield in the Titans where Tony Pollard turning 29. Tony Pollard, I talked about last week, the idea that they might want to move on from him if they got a running back who they really liked, who stepped up. Now, drafting a guy on day three makes that a little less likely, but they can save $7 million if they cut Pollard this offseason. So that's not impossible that that could occur. Tajay Spears, who's there, also like him, but he's more of like a short-term starter. He's not somebody that I think is going to be your long-term replacement as the starter. I think Singleton could be that guy. I think he's very interesting. And now he goes to this spot where it's a new coaching staff. They don't have a lot of ties to the guys from before. So maybe he gets a real shot to potentially carve out a role in this backfield. And with Pollard's age and the contract situation, maybe we see Singleton actually become something. I hope I'm not saying that, Harmon, because of all these bad landing spots and that we're just kind of trying to get excited about some guys from day three turning into something. Just because they're the number two or number three back in their backfield, but there might be an opportunity there. I hope that's not the case. But I have another one that I want to mention, like I said, because I spoiled the Singleton one earlier. Damon Claiborne, he ends up going to the Vikings, and the Vikings were another sneaky landing spot. Aaron Jones, you know, entering his age 32 season, long injury history there. Jordan Mason has not really proven that he can be a lead back, that he should be a lead back. And Claiborne really shouldn't be a lead back either, but could he step in and be that kind of lightning guy next to Jordan Mason if Aaron Jones misses time? I definitely think he could be, and not again that we want to call guys injury prone, because Aaron Jones normally plays through a lot of the injuries that he gets and continues to step out there and just battle. And yeah, the older he gets, him missing time, I think there's a strong chance of that. It's been six seasons or something. He's just had a ton of injuries over the last 5 or 6 years. So could we see him actually get hurt and miss time? I think there's a strong possibility that could open the door for Claiborne, who's not necessarily somebody that I think could emerge like a Nick Singleton and actually turn out to be a lead back, but a guy that could have a lot of value for fantasy if we see Aaron Jones miss time in an offense that I think is going to be a lot better this year with Kyler Murray at quarterback.
Two really good shouts. Again, those are teams that weren't necessarily like the Seahawks we talked about with Jerry and Price, like just a clear runway to the starting running back job, but not that many obstacles. Like definitely some ways that it could work out for Singleton or for Claiborne. And yeah, Singleton, especially good opportunity for him. If anything happens with Tony Pollard, I think he's got a shot. Cause like, yeah, Spears, good player, complimentary back, and Claiborne, really good shout on that one as well. He's got a lot of fun traits to him. You just wonder, obviously, the size always being a limitation. But no, this is what we're talking about. Obviously, these day three picks, we're not saying like flag plant draft these guys, but keep an eye on them. And one guy that I want you guys to keep an eye on is Elijah Surratt, the Baltimore Ravens wide receiver. Now, he's the second Ravens receiver that was drafted this year. The other guy that they drafted with the 16th pick in the third round was Jacoby Lane out of USC. Elijah Surratt, fourth round, 15th pick of the fourth round was Surratt taken there. To me, I liked Surratt better as a prospect than Jacoby Lane. Obviously, Lane's got the draft capital bump, but this is one of those years. Like I said earlier, I'm not going to be, you know, too beholden to draft capital. Like I'm going to be willing to kind of take shots on my own talent evaluations just because of the murky nature of this class overall. Both of these guys, from a Ravens standpoint, were not good separators against press man coverage in college and reception perception. I did a whole breakdown on my YouTube channel about this, like the history of these poor separation wide receivers and their outcomes in the NFL. Spoiler alert, I do want you guys to go watch the video and subscribe to the channel. I'd really appreciate it. While you're watching us here on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to this channel, leave a comment, you know, like all those things. If you're not subscribed to the channel and you're watching this right now, you've hurt both Boone and my feelings. Anyways, point is, did a whole breakdown on my YouTube channel on this. Spoiler alert, vast majority of these guys get cut on the rookie contract. However, the guys that work out, they either fall into one of two buckets. One, they become the volatile deep threats, kind of those sacrificial X receivers, although some of the guys, they do eventually become like good perimeter starting receivers, but they're a little up and down. Think about early career Will Fuller. Think about Kayshon Booty from this past year. Like that's one outcome there. The other one, like the bigger hits, and I've talked about this a lot, they're the ones that become these big power slot receivers. Obviously, we're looking at these two Ravens receivers. Jacoby Lane, if he hits, is probably going to be, because he's got really awesome hands and tight coverage, he's probably going to be that volatile X receiver, sacrificial X, whatever you want to call it. Elijah Surratt, I think, has a chance to be a true power slot type player. And because they took Lane, that makes me think even more that Surratt can become that power slot in a Declan Doyle offense under the Ben Johnson coaching tree that obviously has experience with a lot of players being really good slot options there. So, of course, Zay Flowers is the one of this team, but they're looking to refurbish the depth and the other options in that room. I think Surratt's a guy that I wouldn't be surprised if I think Lane can be a good, useful NFL player, even though he doesn't separate, because his hands are so good and because he really is like a tenacious and like infectious energy type of player. But Surratt is really smart, zone beater. Like I think I wouldn't be surprised if, just from a fantasy standpoint, Surratt, even though he was drafted later, if he hits, ends up being the more useful guy in fantasy for the Ravens. So certainly Boone, a guy that I'm going to want to get some exposure to in my rookie drafts, even though he fell probably about a round further than I would have taken him in the third round, but he falls to the fourth, does Elijah Surratt.
And we do often see guys get taken, you know, second at their position by a team and end up overproducing the guy who was taken above them. Like that happens all the time. Aaron Jones, who we were just talking about with the Packers, right? He was the second back drafted by the Packers that year and ends up going on to be the star in that backfield. So it definitely can happen. And there's not many good offenses around the league that have these kind of ambiguous receiver rooms. And you mentioned Zay Flowers, good receiver. He's their guy. And yet behind him, there's so much opportunity that really anyone could emerge, and they haven't had someone step up. Sadly, Rashad Bateman, there was a lot of opportunity there. He did not come through. One of these guys could do that. And I think this is the kind of spot and the kind of offense where you should be spending picks on, because as we said all show, once you get to the second round of rookie drafts, and even the late first, the second round, the third round, it's wide open. Just take guys that you believe in. Try to look for good offenses. Try to look for good opportunities that could be coming their way. But really, we're going to see some surprises, I think, this year come out of that range of drafts, in part just because right now that range does not look great. So there will be some that emerge, and we're going to have to continue digging. And I think we just gave you a few options there that will go in the late second, you know, third round of rookie drafts and could have a lot of value.
Well, that is a great way to wrap this show, Boone, and transition us to what is going to be our next show on the feed, because we're going to put a lot of these theories, we're going to try to uncover some of these gems, as you and I are going to have a live Dynasty rookie mock draft on Tuesday. And it's not just going to be us, Boone. We're going to be sharing the stage with Nate Tice. He's going to join us for a three-man show on our Rookie Dynasty mock draft. So really looking forward to that show. That's going to be live at 2 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. But for now, Boone, really appreciate you joining me for this one. I know you are going to be in the rankings cave for the next few days, figuring out where you're slotting these rookies, these veterans, the whole deal. So appreciate you joining me, man. I hope you had a good NFL draft. And hey, your Bills made some good picks as well. We didn't talk about it, but I hope you enjoyed the NFL draft and look forward to more conversations about it over the next week or so.
Yeah, the Bills picking up a lot of picks along the way there. So that helps. You have more shots at it when you're picking that many times, especially, you know, day two, early day three. So that was nice to see. Great job by you this weekend, man. I know you put in a ton of work, and you guys did an awesome job there in New York. And yes, my rookie rankings will come out on Sunday, my updated redraft rankings on Monday, and my updated Dynasty trade value charts on Tuesday. So I will get those all out as fast as I can. If they're ready earlier, we will put them out earlier, but it does take a little bit of time to update everything after the draft.
It's a lot of Justin Boone updates. I'm doing a lot of that myself on my end as well. So the work doesn't stop. The fun never stops either, because this job is a blast. And yeah, great weekend here up with everybody at Yahoo. Just couldn't be more thankful. Couldn't be more grateful to work with such a great team. And couldn't be more grateful that you guys continue to support all of our content and rock with us. It's awesome to be able to do this. And the NFL draft is always such a good time to be able to kind of bask in that gratitude. But like I said, the fun doesn't stop. The analysis doesn't stop. Boone and I and Nate Tice will be live, as mentioned, on Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern for our rookie mock draft. So subscribe to the channel if you're watching us on YouTube so you are back for that show. Until then, we are out.